break into a bright day, singing beautiful melodies. But you know that things aren't quite like that. The other day, Dad old Sammy asked me for some bread. He said he needed a little extra to calm his stress from these.
Okay, three, so we're rolling. As we are recording this podcast in Chico, California, and are employed by the university, we acknowledge and are mindful that CSU Chico stands on lands that were originally occupied by the first people of this area, and we recognize the Machupta and their distinctive spiritual relationship with this land and the waters that run through campus. We are humbled that our campus resides upon sacred lands that once sustained the Machupta people for centuries.
Hi everyone, welcome to another one of our episodes. Welcome to the First Generation One of Many podcast. Our mission is to create an archive of discussions with and about first generation student experiences in and out of the classroom. We hope to continue raising awareness and understanding while providing voice for students and alum, as well as providing staff, faculty, and students with resources to continue improving our campus as a community.
All right, and I'm Joshua Whittinghill. Welcome to First Generation One of Many podcast, episode 5, and I'm joined by the wonderful Teresa A. Hernandez. Hi, Teresa.
Hello. Hey, Josh.
How's the day going today for you?
Pretty good. The sun's out. It's not too hot, so I'm actually enjoying it. I have the windows open for now, but pretty good so far. How about your day?
It is going. It's been the adventure of being out for a few minutes this morning to run an errand bright and early, and then back in, hanging out with the kids. They're doing their schoolwork. So yeah, I think their school day is winding down already. And then they're going in to do some homework, I guess, after lunchtime, if they have any today. Some days they do, some days they don't. It's right. The interesting web of online learning for middle school and high school students that I'm learning about now. So, that leads us now. We're going to go and share our quotes. We have quotes for the day. Usually we have one. Today I went with two of them that I think are connected to our work, and the people that the quotes came from were definitely connected with our discussion topics for today, which is going to be discussions today on civic engagement, voting, and rural settings and experiences are like for first generation students in rural settings. So the first quote is from Audre Lorde. The quality of light by which we scrutinize our lives has direct bearing upon the product which we live and upon the changes which we hope to bring about through those lives. I thought that'd be very poignant these times. It feels as if people I'm talking with, I know I am also quite often realizing how critical I am of the things I'm doing because I'm so isolated at times. And a lot of people are feeling that as well. That more scrutiny upon themselves because we don't always get time to bounce ideas off people or get to roam the halls and connect with people and get feedback. So that's a good one there. The next one from Angela Davis. It is important not only to have the awareness and to feel impelled to become involved, it's important that there be a forum out there to which one can relate, an organization, a movement. So I thought that would be extremely poignant. And then as we were getting started, we are joined by two guests today we're very thankful for. And one of the guests was sharing something she's going to talk about later on actual movements and things that are happening in some rural settings around the state. So our first guest, Teresa.
Yes. So super excited to introduce one of our guests today. So Enrique Ricky Galvan, who most of his friends call Ricky, is from Gridley, California, which is a small town about 30 minutes south of Chico. He is a first-generation college student who graduated last year with his bachelor's in psychology and a minor in sociology. He is currently in his second year as a master's student in the social science program with an option in career and life planning. After he earns his master's degree, he would love to be an advisor or counselor to help students who come from first-generation underrepresented communities like himself. Awesome. And welcome, Enrique, or Ricky, which we'll now refer to as Ricky.
Yeah, Ricky, welcome. Go ahead and unmute yourself there. Say hi.
Hello, everyone. Super excited to be here. Can't wait to have the discussions we're going to have today. I've been pumped all week, so I can't wait.
Nice. Yeah, I'm so glad you made it. And I want to throw in a little bit. Our podcast is like, we're only in episode 5 so far. We've had at least two guests on every episode. We had one episode with six guests. We had another one with three guests. So far we've had at least about 14 to 15 guests, but the only town that has been represented by more than one guest is, of course, Gridley.
Hey, you know,
our second episode, we had a guest from Gridley as well. Okay, and our second guest for today is Anne Schulte. She's a professor of education and former teacher, but also serves as the Chico State Campus Director of Civic Engagement. As the Campus Civic and Voter Empowerment Coordinator, she works to make sure everyone knows what they need to be educated voters. In addition to doing voter outreach, she works very hard to connect the university to our 12 county regions through community partnerships. She likes to be a part of preparing our rural students to contribute community vitality in their hometowns and learning from and about those places. Welcome, Anne.
Good morning, everyone. I'm very happy to be here with all of you.
All right. So we're going to go ahead and get this discussion started. And like I said, I mentioned, we're gonna talk about civic engagement, sort of the umbrella, sort of bigger picture. And we're gonna narrow our ways down through the day and go into then some voting and discussions around that, and then into experiences for first generation students in rural settings. So first, it'd be good to hear, what is civic engagement? We hear people talking about that, especially working on a campus. People say it and the phrase gets used, but it doesn't mean we always get to see it in action or really understand it. So we'd love to hear from both of you on that, like, since you've been so involved with it the last number of years, how do you define civic engagement and what does that really mean?
Well, technically the definition of civic is related to of the government. And so when we think about civic engagement, we think about how do we as community citizens participate in our government? And that can look lots of different ways, but the most common way is voting. And so this year we had a primary in March and we have a general election, a presidential election in November. And so voting has been a significant part of our civic engagement work this year. And we also had a census this year. So census happens every 10 years. And some would argue that's our civic duty to be counted as a member of our community so that our communities are represented in all the different ways that census data is used. So in a literal sense, that's what civic engagement means. But really in a broad sense, what we mostly do is seek to engage with our community, that being Chico, because our campus sits in the town of Chico and in Butte County. But our university serves 12 counties, the size of about 33,000 square miles. And most of that is rural areas. And so another large piece of our work through civic engagement as part of the strategic plan of the university is to connect with all of the communities that are in our region. And not only try to provide our resources and our intellectual capacity and our suggestions and ideas, but also to learn from those communities, because there's a lot of innovation that happens in small communities where they just get stuff done because they're small and everyone knows someone and things are able to get accomplished as a community in ways that sometimes bigger places don't happen. So my goal as a director is to try to help the university understand the value and the benefit of all of these places around us, while also bringing to bear whatever we have to offer those communities in terms of support for community and economic development.
And Ricky, as a student doing some of this work, what do you feel or have you experienced is part of the idea of civic engagement from the student standpoint of what you get to do and what you've been able to do?
Yeah, so I guess what that means to me is just trying to give back to my community so they can help give back to me and I help give back to them. So kind of like a cycle of me doing my part in terms of voting and voting promotion and senses and things like that, or talking to like my family members who may not be able to come to college, but they still want to learn what it means to vote in the census and all that good information. So when I think about that, I just think about civic engagement. I think about, yeah, just what I can do for other people, who I don't always see around me. So I think about like my younger siblings, people from my hometown back in Gridley, people all around Butte County and beyond. When I just think of civic engagement, I for sure think of giving back and trying to help.
And when you first got into it, was it something you were already thinking about, or was it something that just sort of appeared in front of you one day as you were walking across campus and discovered it randomly?
It's just kind of like that, exactly. Because growing up, my parents don't vote because they're undocumented. So voting was never really a conversation we had in my household. So when I would walk around campus when I was a freshman, I remember seeing a booth and I was like, civic engagement, what is that? I don't know. I thought it was like a restaurant or something. I had no idea what it was. I had no idea what it meant. But once I got some information and they talked to me and gave me more resources about voting, and that's my right as an American citizen, I get to do that, and it's my civic duty. That's kind of when I became more involved. And I noticed too that like when I got older, like I said, we never really talked about voting or census in my household. But as I got older, and it still happens to this day, my dad always comes to me and he asks me questions about voting and the process and how is it to like be in the booth or to mail it in. And I just think that's super exciting that he still wants to be interested and involved with it, despite his circumstances. And I'm happy that I get to give him, my friends, other family members, and my people in my community that kind of information.
That's awesome. And I think one of the things too that came to mind while Anne, you were talking, and then Ricky, you mentioned it too, is kind of like one of those aspects is a census. And I feel like from when that was occurring, a lot of like the information that was going around, especially in the Latinx communities, was what exactly is a census and really clearly defining it, because a lot of us in the Latinx community, we didn't understand it or knew what the purpose of it was. And there was a lot of fear and stigma around it. Like, don't fill out the census. That's how they'll know if our family members are undocumented. That's when, you know, you kind of increase your risk of deportations and things like that. So I think like really understanding what that is and what it's used for is like super, super imperative for all the communities, which is, I'm super happy you guys mentioned that too. I'm also wondering in terms of what is one example that the Civic Engagement Office is currently doing, or what is something that the Civic Engagement Office is working with or communities currently, anything that's programming or in planning?
Yeah, so we're really focused right now on doing voter education and outreach and just making sure everyone knows how to register to vote, make sure they know how to fill out their ballot. It's a mail-in year. Everybody's mailing in their ballot, and that being a new voter and also having never voted by mail before. So all of these things are not something that anybody, if you've never done it before, knows how to do. And so we're working really hard to make sure that students get that information several times from different sources. But in terms of community partnerships, I want to talk about a really great connection we have with Corning High School, which is about 30 miles away, and they're in Tehama County. And Corning High School has a ranch, and they have asked us to help them with their master plan for that ranch. And that includes lots of things like building a bridge, creating an interpretive trail throughout the ranch, doing some upkeep, could potentially include engineering projects or agricultural education projects, might even include a mural. We have an arts professor who teaches a murals class who's done some murals in Tehama County and in Butte County. And so there's lots of ways we can think about connecting with our communities and being a part of what they're doing. And this is a really exciting example that we've had probably four faculty already doing projects with Corning around this ranch. And ideally we'd like to be out there, but because we're isolated because of COVID, we haven't been able to for the past 6 months, but I have had students out there and maybe even sooner than later, because it's an outside context, it's a place where we can actually do some of the COVID safe connections before next fall, potentially. So that's exciting.
Yeah, thank you for that. Is a note on the murals. If you want to see some of the work that that class has done, I was able to work with them about a year ago, and we wanted to increase awareness around STEM or science, technology, engineering, and math. And there's a school, an elementary school here in Chico that is focused on STEM. Their curriculum is STEM. And so we were able to work with the school and a couple of the fourth graders at the time, and they selected some women scientists and some scientists of color. And then the class from Chico State went and was able to paint a mural that is about 30 feet, 40 feet wide by 20 feet high or so. And it represents the scientists that the students had picked out. So it has a couple, has some women and some scientists of color as well. So that's one way if you want to go check it out locally and see some of the work they've done. It's really great. That class does get involved quite a bit. And then also, to go back to what Anne was saying a little bit, 12 days and counting, right? 12 days left to register to vote at the time of this recording. Oh, go ahead, Anne.
Actually, 12 days until October 19th, which is the last day to register online to vote.
Okay.
So you can register to vote until the last minute on November 3rd, election day. But you have to vote in, you have to register in person after October 19th. So you still have an opportunity to register to vote up until the end of election day. It's conditional, but you'll have to wait for it to be approved. But I don't want people to think you can't register to vote after October 19th, but you can't register online after October 19th.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for that. Thanks for that correction. And where would one go if they want to register online? Where would they go to do that?
Yeah, they would go to the Secretary of State website, but do you want me to read out the address?
Oh, yeah, you can. That'd be great.
Okay. You should go to https://registertovote.ca.gov/?T=S. Or you could just Google register to vote. But if you go to the site that I just gave you, which we will put in writing somewhere.
Yes.
If you go to that site, it's going to ask you what university you attend. And then we're going to get credit in a contest we're in California. All of the colleges are competing for the most voter registrations. And Chico State is number one in percentage, not number one in total, because we're smaller than like Fullerton's killing it, but they have like, you know, a gazillion students. Yeah. So, but we're number one proportional percentage wise at Chico State. So we're hoping to really improve the number of students that we have registered to vote.
That's awesome. And in terms of voting, so I feel like personally, I have 1,000 questions with these mail-in ballots and like deadlines and really crucial deadlines to know about. What would you say would just be like tips for first timers who are doing mail-in ballots? Like, when should we make sure it's postmarked by, or does that matter? Do we have to send it in by a certain day? Kind of just those overarching things.
Yeah, you should send it in as soon as you get it and fill it out and send it back. So there's a couple things to think about. When you fill out your ballot, everybody's going to be voting by mail. You're going to get a paper ballot. You're going to fill it out according to the directions. You're going to make sure you sign the back. And that's very, very important where it asks you to sign. It's underneath the flap on the envelope, because that signature is going to get compared to a signature they have on file, which for many people, it's going to be your DMV signature. So whatever signature you have on your driver's license. And if you don't have a driver's license or an ID through the DMV, then you maybe need to check with your elections office about a signature. But make sure that your signature matches that. Make sure it's signed. Either send it through the U.S. mail, or you can Google where to send my ballot, and you could do it, put it in an official ballot drop box. Mm-hmm. All communities will have them. And in Chico, we have one at the BMU, outside the BMU right now, open and ready to take ballots up until election day. Okay. And if you lose your ballot, you can show up at the vote center in the BMU, October 31st to November 3rd, you can ask for a replacement ballot. You can ask to get a ballot in a language other than English. You can ask for assistance on a voting machine. If maybe you have some visual needs or some other kinds of needs, you can have assistance in completing your ballot if you're not exactly sure what to do or how to do it. You can show up there on those 4 days up through Election Day, and you could do any of those things there.
Okay, cool. And I think one of the questions that was when through some conversation would be, if you submit your ballot, if you end up doing that like on Election Day, is your vote actually counted towards the election, having it be Election Day? Does that make sense?
Yes. And it's a really good question. And you can also sign up for something called Track My Ballot. And you can just Google that. And they will let you know where your ballot is when, and you can make sure that it gets there. As long as your ballot is submitted by November 3rd, those ballots will count. So the one thing that's happening this year is, like, because of the pandemic, because so many states are using vote by mail, we don't know that we're gonna know the outcome of the presidential election on November 4th. I mean, I think most people are saying probably we won't know for sure, unless it's really clear. But we think it's probably going to take, you know, a little bit longer this year because of everything that's going on to count ballots and things like that. So I'm encouraging people, as soon as you get your ballot, fill it out, send it in, so that if there's an issue, if your signature doesn't match, if your address isn't right, if something's askew, they'll contact you and say, hey, is this you? Is this your signature? Or we need another signature on file for you to do, or what have you. So you want some time in case anything happens.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
And as far as the Voter Assistance Center, ours is opening up here, you said, on October 31st. Are you aware of other campuses doing similar things?
Yes, I don't know which ones this year, but in March, there were 12 campuses with voter assistance centers. So I suspect those campuses will have them again this November.
Perfect. I was going to say, because for all college students out there, if you're a Chico State student and you're back home somewhere away from Chico, maybe if you're near another CSU or a UC, check and see what they might have available for you. And those voter assistance centers aren't open exclusively just for students. They're for anybody in the community to come to, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Perfect. So that's a good message for anybody to check on, that a university nearby you may be able to help support some of the questions or concerns you have around this right now. And that much takes me back to a question I had, because voting, we talked about, is very important, and we're doing all the work. It sounds like you're doing a lot of great work getting the message out, with our campus only having roughly 16,000 students and being top in percentage. That's a great work, and the messaging is obviously working then. But we've talked about the census a little bit. What does the census mean? Like, why should college students even be counted on the census? Why do they want to fill it out? Or why should they be asking their families to fill it out, because now they're back home? And so the idea of the census is very confusing to begin with for students who never have really filled them out before, because the last time it happened, you know, the average age of a student in the university is around 23 to 24 years old. So even those students, the average age student, wasn't really involved. They were 12, 13 years old. So what is the importance of the census, and what does it mean for campuses?
Yeah, the census is really important for a couple reasons. Not unimportant is the amount of money we get as a result of the data that comes from the census. So for every person not counted, we lose about $20,000 over 10 years in our county. So we get money for programs like, social programs and CalFresh and different kinds of Pell Grants, different kinds of programs that our students and our community members may participate in, get funded in part because of census data. So if our census data doesn't reflect as many people as we have, then we don't get our fair share of that money. And the second thing is representation. And if we don't say who's here, then we can't expect our elected leaders to represent those people. We need to know who's here in order to say these people in our community should be represented, should be served, should get what they deserve in our community. And if we don't know who that is, we haven't documented that in any way, then it's harder to ask for those services and that commitment from our elected leaders.
Okay, and that kind of leads us into the idea of then being away from campuses now. And you're saying, oh, be counted and mean for our county. But is that, what's the importance then if you're living in Los Angeles, San Diego, somewhere in between Chico, or you're away from your main campus? How does that impact the situation?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because it was really complicated when we left campus in March, because the date for census is technically April 1st, wherever you're living on April 1st. And a lot of students had gone home and weren't living in Chico anymore. The thing is, the census isn't about you as a person. The census is about who you represent in that place and in that time. So you would normally typically be living in Chico on April 1st. You should be counted here, because in 10 years or 5 years, someone else is going to take your place who's more or less like you, right? So you're representing a population of college students in Chico during this time. And that's why we tried really hard to make sure our students and their parents knew that they should be counting themselves from Chico, where they would have typically normally been on April 1st, even though they might have been anywhere because of the pandemic. It's been a very a very confusing, complicated census this year. And I'm just crossing my fingers and hoping we've done everything we possibly can to have gotten the best count possible.
And you said April 1st, and that is the date when it opened up and people could start registering or filling out information for the census. But is there an important date for when it ends?
Refer back to my comment about chaotic. So the census was extended. It was supposed to end in July. Because of the pandemic, it was extended until October. And then the government said, no, September 30th. And then that's still in question. I'm not sure that it's actually officially decided. We have stopped outreach as of September 30th, but it's possible they're still allowing people to do the census. I mean, you could go to my2020census.gov and see if it works. But it's been really quite confusing about when it's actually going to end. But April 1st is the date that is the date where we say, if we stop time, where is everybody on that date? And that's the number, that's the place where you record yourself having been.
So that clears it all up.
Exactly. No.
Yeah, because I know a lot of searches, when you look, go online to look census, a lot of information is coming up that says October 31st. And so yeah, who knows with what's being decided and chosen. So that leads us into, so we have civic engagement and voting. Did we miss anything, Ricky, that you wanted to add about voting and being a student or what you're talking with, you know, your peers about?
Yeah, one big thing, I guess, about voting, and that would just like a message I really want to get across, is that your vote really does matter. I know I have some very close friends who just think, oh, my vote doesn't matter. I'm not going to vote. It's already chosen before I even try. And it's like, no, like, you know, who made you think that way? Because whoever is trying to convince you that your vote doesn't matter is doing a good job. And that's not the truth at all. You know, when you vote, you're not just voting for yourself. You're voting for people who can't. So I always think about like my parents. I think about my little cousins who are not 18 yet. I think about some of my friends who are, you know, in the penitentiary, things like that. People who deserve to have their voices be heard. That's why you have to vote, and so that you can be the voice for them, because they can't be that for themselves just yet. And you just want to make the best decision that you can. Make informed voting decisions. Don't just whatever your parents or friends or whatever they tell you. Please do some research behind it. You don't have to be a mini version of your parents. You can make your own decisions, and it's your own vote, your own voice that's being counted for. So that's just the biggest thing I want to get across, is that your vote does matter. So please, please take it very seriously. Don't wait till the last day to mail it in. Do it ahead of time or drop it off in the box. That's what I like to do. I like to drop it off in the box and get my sticker. Probably won't get my sticker this year, but that's okay because I know I still voted. So.
Mm-hmm. You get a sticker in the mail. You get a sticker that comes with your ballot. So
I haven't got my, I think I need to check the mail today. I think I should be getting it, my mail-in ballot. So I'm excited. I'll do my sticker. Cool.
I also want to add to what Ricky was saying about students who think their vote doesn't matter. And sometimes they say, oh, well, I live in California. You know, our presidential vote's already decided because of the state that I live in. But I just hope that everyone understands that there's a lot more on the ballot than just the president. Mm-hmm. There are several levels of government where you have an opportunity to vote for city council member who makes decisions about how your city does certain things and what kinds of things they support and how they hire a police chief and the way that police chief does trainings for its force. You have a state legislator that makes decisions about programs that might serve your population, or college students in your area, or the university, the state legislators who decide whether or not the university is going to get more funding or not. Mm-hmm. You have propositions on the ballot that impact certain things in your life. Right now, Prop 22 is related to Uber and Lyft and any kind of companies that are contract workers. What are they called? Anyway, the gig industry is impacted by this proposition. So there's lots of things on the ballot that matter to you more than just the president. And you, it's important that you have your voice heard about those things as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that you mentioned, Ricky, about kind of like voting for those who can't, or not taking, you know, taking your right to vote for advantage. I used to think, like, when I the first year I was able to vote, I used to think like, oh, well, you know, you learn about this, and if they win certain states, even if I vote, it doesn't even matter and stuff like that. But then, and I was talking to one of my friends about it, she was a lot more, she got involved in politics a lot faster than I did, a lot sooner than I did, before I even had the remotest of understanding around it. And she's undocumented, and she told me, she was just like, you know, as a friend with so much love, she's like, you're being selfish. She's like, you have a right to do something that I will never be able to do, that I can only dream about. I can only wish I could have that experience, and you have the ability to do it, yet you're not taking advantage of it. Like, that's so selfish. Like, if you don't want to do it for yourself right now, do it at least for me, because I can go in there, do it for us. And so that kind of really like woke me up, and I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. Like, that's so rude of me to not even care or consider it in that perspective. And so it's a really important point that you brought up. And one of the questions I have too, and I kind of feel like to a degree with your experiences when it comes to voting and learning about that and in your education, because I went to school to high school in Durham. So it's also a very, very small town, and what I would consider, you know, being a rural town, because it's right outside of Chico. Maybe now I feel like it's a little bit bigger, but at least when I was in high school, it just was very small and isolated. And you being from Gridley, I know that you're, you know, it's bigger than Durham, but not by much. But what's your experience been kind of being a student with a rural background from a rural town? And what does even the word rural mean to you?
So I guess the word rural means to me is if you come from like a very small town with a lot of agriculture around you. Like, to me, Chico is still a rural town. It's a bigger town, but it's still rural. And I think it's because my mom, she grew up in LA, so I think of LA as like a real big city. But I understand that some folks, Chico is a real big city, and it kind of is. I mean, it has a Best Buy and a Walmart and stuff, so I guess that's like the qualification.
Parker's of a big city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but definitely growing up in a small rural town, representation was a really big thing. Because there was, me growing up, the town was very, like, you were either Mexican-American or you were, like, a white American. And, or, that was, like, the two biggest demographics. And if you were, like, another person of color, another minority, you just kind of chose your spot. And I've seen so many times where the voices of the Mexican-American community weren't being heard in town because they just had no positions of power, I guess you could say. Like, I can't think of many examples of Mexican-American or, I guess, non-white teachers that I had growing up in Gridley. And I think diversity is a big part of that. The first time I had, like, a Hispanic teacher was during my Spanish class in high school when I was a junior or senior, and which is pretty surprising. And even in college, the first time I had a Black professor was when I was taking an African-American studies class here at Chico. So I just, 'cause that's one big thing that I think of when I think of rural living is, like, not so much diversity and not so much representation in terms of the higher-ups. But that's kind of was always a motivator for me and my friends growing up, where it was like, man, it feels like our people's voices, they never get heard. So we have to be the ones to make a change and be the inspiration and influence to the next generation so we can show them that you can do more than just be like a field laborer. You know, you can be an educator, you can be a lawyer, you can be this and that. And I'm the oldest cousin out of all my little cousins. So I always had this chip on my shoulder to where I had to go and want to come to college and show them that, you know, you can get your degree and you can do this despite what people think of you. And you can give back and give to the community. And even though it is a small town, Gridley, it's still a town that matters. You know, we don't matter any less than LA. We don't matter any less than Paris or nothing. Because this town is what raised me, and this is where all my friends and family live. And you want to take care of the things that you love. So just giving back, and I guess that would be the biggest thing. Is part of rural living is that I'm thankful that it is a small town where, like, almost everyone knows everyone. Because when you see someone doing good, it gets reflected upon the whole town. And when you try and do a positive thing, word of mouth spreads pretty quickly. And I just think it's easy to be an inspiration because everyone can see you shining, either like on social media or like your friend, your big brother can share just how good people from Gridley can actually do, or people from small rural towns can actually do.
Yeah, I love that. And you bring up a memory that I had in college, and I was talking to one of my professors in my Latino-Latina studies courses and I took. And so he asked me, what do you want to do when you graduate? And I told him, I was like, well, I want to go to grad school and get my master's. And he was like, awesome, what? And I was like, in education, which I ended up doing. He was like, then what do you want to do after that? And I told him, I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know, I just want to do something that can make a difference. I was like, I want to help. And I was like, but, you know, I don't think I'm going to be someone big and famous, you know, like all these like martyrs that we have in our history. But he was like, you don't have to be someone like that or do, you know, exactly as they did to make a difference. He was like, you can go back into your community and make a difference in specific roles and things like that. And I think, like, I'm really grateful towards him to kind of have embedded that idea in my head where, you know, I can take everything that I'm learning and bring it back to Chico, bring it back to Durham in my county, and still help out, you know, my people, help out my community that I identify with as well. And that's something that I feel like growing up was never really brought up, like, because it was kind of like, oh, go to big cities, go do big things. And I was like, well, I can for a little bit, but why can't I bring all that knowledge back and, like, feed it to my community so everyone has it and we can all use it and grow from it? And I think that's something that really drives me and having come back, because they're like, you lived in San Francisco, why did you go back to Chico? And I was like, because it's my community. That's where my family is. That's where I grew up. That's what I love. Like, I want to come back and share everything that I've been able to learn and learn more from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an expression I always say. It goes, what's the point of eating if you can't feed your family? You know what I mean? It's like, if I do good, then we all got to do good. Sharing is caring. And that's just how my parents raised me, like, coming from a Mexican-American household, is that community and sticking together means a lot. It can take you so very far. So I always think of that phrase when I am feeling kind of lazy, or if I see an opportunity that's like, oh, you can go talk to these kids in Gridley via Zoom now in the virtual world. And it's like, yeah, I'll do it. You know, I'll make the time, I'll make the space, like, because it's not just good for the community, but I feel like it's good for your soul. It just feels so good.
That's good to hear, because we have such an array of students that are coming into higher education from all over. And you say you consider Chico to be rural and Gridley rural, but don't we also have students coming from other areas where to them, Gridley is an extremely large city, right? So Anne, can you share any experience or any just a little bit about kind of the spectrum of rural and what that means?
Well, rural means whatever you think it means. I mean, I've spent 10 years studying rural education, and I've come to the conclusion that it's very difficult to define. Sure, we can say size, we can say distance from an urban setting. We can look at some of those things, but unfortunately, a lot of times it gets defined through rates of poverty, through lack of access, through lack of broadband. We just too often define rural by what it doesn't have. And that is very unfortunate and unfair. And I think that it doesn't do justice to our people who live there or our students who come from those communities. And so I just try to work with students from our smaller communities and help to give them opportunities to share their perspectives and their experiences and their strengths and all the ways in which these small communities do amazing things. And then also try to help the university think about students. You don't have to leave a small community to be successful. And I don't think we always at the university think like that. Like Teresa was saying about you can still, that's an option. If you want to go home into your community, how do you take your degree in media design or electrical engineering or whatever degree you have? What would it look like to go home with that? If that's what you want to do. I just think too often we push students to leave our small communities, and that doesn't help our small communities develop in ways that they'll survive. And I'm very concerned about our region surviving if we keep pushing people out of our rural communities and then giving and then expecting nothing of the young people who stay. So it's two parts, you know, coming back, but also when I teach teachers, I help them think about what are you doing to engage your young people in your communities right now as 12-year-olds, as 14-year-olds, as 18-year-olds? What can you do to help them see that this place deserves their commitment and their work and their love? It makes us who we are. Places are a part of who we are. I love what Ricky was saying about how connected and how grateful he is for being from where he's from. And that doesn't have to stop when you leave. And I just think we're losing opportunities to capitalize and to highlight that piece of our places.
Yes, it seems to be an extremely complex process, complex situation to go through, because working with first generation students from all over California for 20 years now, I unfortunately also have students share with me quite frequently that the message they get is go to college and don't come back to our community because we want you to have a different life. And then we hear Teresa and Ricky talking about, hey, I want to be able to come back and uplift the community that brought me up, that encouraged me as a young person to go out and do those things and accomplish things that weren't common in our community because it was small and it wasn't a message for decades of, hey, go to college. It was more of a message seemed to be for a long time was your responsibility is here in our community. And so people weren't leaving as much. And so even for me in those 20 years, I've seen a large number of increase in students coming from those rural type areas has really increased over the time. And quite often I talk with students as they're entering their third, fourth year, and many students seem to be extremely confused quite often of, do I go back? Do I move on? And how do I balance those two things? So it is a very common situation for students coming from different areas and trying to balance that. Because like Ricky mentioned, coming from Los Angeles or San Diego or San Francisco or a large city like that, the question of going back isn't really necessarily a question. And necessarily that the people are too worried about, unless they really have come to like, oh, I really do like living in this smaller type of area. And so maybe we see some of the reasons why towns like Chico population over the last 20 years has increased, almost doubled, you know, in that time. Yes, we have other extenuating circumstances that have impacted our population in Chico, but in general, it was growing at a steady rate because a lot of people were realizing, oh, maybe I don't need to go back to that large city and I can still do stuff here. And so anyway, it is a big complex situation that many first generation students are now grappling with because we have such an increase also in the number of first generation students who are attending higher education. We're seeing that. So the work that the Civic Engagement Office is doing is really important. And it's one of the main reasons we wanted to bring you both on today to kind of get some insight and be able to spread that vision and be able to share some of the insights of what students are experiencing and share this with the listeners. Because many of us working in higher ed are impacted by first generation students, whether we know it or not, because we have them in classrooms we're teaching in, we have them in programs we're advising or that we're programming with, and then how are we helping to engage with them and get them involved a little bit more. So go for it, Teresa.
I think I want to just encourage, especially the listeners who are first generation, keep encouraging you and for you to encourage your peers to keep questioning that, to ask yourself, where do I want to end up? Why? Where did this idea or thought of I have to go somewhere different to make a difference or to do something or to thrive? Where did that come from? And question yourself, why can't you do that in your own community? I can only speak from my personal experience as a first gen student. And I feel like within my community, specifically my family, they were my aunts and uncles, all my extended family, we're all field workers. They're all field workers. And so for them, their perspective of the world was a lot smaller for them. All they knew was field work and traveling and knowing that, you know, during this season, they can go to Bakersfield and then they could travel to Merced during this season and Chico's great for the harvest. So it's just like their perspective was just a lot way different. And me having the opportunity to go and pursue my higher education really broadened that perspective for myself. And that's when I really, with the help of my mentors, like started questioning these things. And so keep asking yourself these questions. And you might not have the answer, but search them out, talk to people, talk about it. And I promise you, you are not the only student attending Chico State who's asking yourself, I'm being pressured to go to a big city, but I don't want to. Like, how can I make my family or whoever it is that's telling you that understand that I want to be here and I want to make a difference here and be okay with that?
Thanks for adding that, Teresa. And this brings us to the moment of the episode where we're going to hear some recommendations. And these are recommendations that listeners can go and actually engage with or at least search out on the internet and they find to enhance your daily lives. And our recommendations each episode may or may not be connected to the topic. So, Anne, do you have a recommendation?
Well, I'd like to promote something called Wildcats Connect, and you can Google that on our Chico State page and find a link to that. And that is a platform we're using to try to connect alumni with current students. So anyone who's on our campus right now is a student and you want to talk to someone who has graduated from Chico State and is doing the job you want to do or lives in the place you want to live, you can connect with people through that platform. And we have a group within Wildcat Connect called North State. So you can join that group if you're from one of the counties that we serve up here. But it's open to all students and all alumni. But if you particularly are from a smaller community or from the North State and you want to connect with other people who are from similar kinds of backgrounds or areas as you, you can sign up for that group when you sign up for Wildcats Connect.
Okay.
Wildcat Connect.
Wildcat Connect. and we will have the link here as well. Ricky.
So one thing that I really want to, I guess, plug is the power of social media. Since we're all virtual and you can't really see your friends, I've been following a couple pages that I think are super awesome, giving friendly reminders and updates. And one of my favorite ones is Chico_civic engagement. I think they're super awesome. They have cool little reminders. They have like giveaways and stuff like that. I think are super awesome. They always give updates about the ballot bowl, and I'm always excited to see Chico in first place. So definitely check that out as a resource. And another resource I like to follow is Project Pulso. So P-R-O-J-E-C-T-P-U-L-S-O. And it's like a Spanish-based platform similar to that, where they give friendly reminders and updates in Spanish and in English about the census, about voting. They have a bunch of feel-good stories about what different Latino or Hispanic people are doing in the community all over the world. So I really enjoy their content too.
Thank you. Those are two good recommendations. And I wanted to recommend two quick ones about engagement. There's one called Youth Engaged for Change, and it is a federally organized program a number of years back that is to bring youth together from elementary school, middle school, high school, to kind of find opportunities and inspiration and be able to share some of their stories. And that is on Engage Youth, engage.youth.gov. And then the second one is a book called How I Resist, Activism and Hope for a New Generation. And that was a book that came out about 2 years ago, but it's a collection of essays, songs, illustrations, interviews about activism and hope. And it ranges from middle school to post-secondary. So the collection, and it's called How I Resist, Activism and Hope for a New Generation.
Can I just piggyback on that for a second, Josh? I'm so heartened by the kinds of things I'm seeing in rural communities in the last year with respect to racial justice activism. I think typically rural spaces have been seen as white, and I would say that they are often characterized as racist. But I think rural spaces are more diverse than we realize, and that there are certainly people in those spaces who want to be a part of this revolution of racial justice. And they are now showing up in ways that more publicly and more intentionally than I've ever seen before in my lifetime. So I'm very excited to watch these movements develop and these voices become part of the fabric of rural spaces as more complex and more complicated spaces than we maybe like to give them credit in our general narrative about them.
Yeah, thank you for that. And Teresa, you have a recommendation for us today.
Hi. yes, I mean, besides encouraging students to start questioning their surroundings and these different things about what they're being told and for their career goals, one of the things I would say is definitely encourage you to also brush up on, like, one of the biggest things for me would be the propositions when it comes to voting, because they could be read entirely different than what they actually will do. So, you know, it's that play on words, that language, the difficulty of really understanding what it is that you're reading. And you think by voting yes, it's doing something, but it's actually doing the total opposite. So really just encouraging you all to Google it. Really, there's some great resources out there that we will release on these show notes. And I was trying to look for the website right now, but there's this really amazing one I totally appreciate that actually has rewritten the propositions in Spanish and in a way for your family members to understand, which is amazing, because I would always send my parents off with a little sticky note and say, like, vote yes on one, two, or like no on two, kind of like really just breaking it down for them while as we would go over it beforehand, so they really understand how to vote and what it means that they're signing off on. So I think that one's super awesome. And I will we'll include that in the show notes too, so everyone has the resources as I locate them. But I would say those two big things is just kind of understand what you're reading. And there's resources out there that really do an amazing job breaking it down for you.
And that reminds me, I wanted to highlight one of the propositions that really connects with our discussion today and really looking at college students and incoming college students specifically, because Proposition 18 is set up to allow 17-year-olds who will turn 18 at the time of the next general election. It allows them the right to vote during the primaries and special elections. So I wanted to highlight that one with Proposition 18. Can be really impactful for college students and campuses in general moving forward. All right, so that brings us to an end. Unfortunately, we do have to log off and go to do other things, but we appreciate Anne and Ricky being here. Thank you both so much. You've added a wonderful discussion for us to share once we get these podcasts posted and public and shared. So hopefully we see you again soon, and other discussions or collaborations may come up. But thank you very much, Teresa. It's been another great day seeing you again.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks so everyone. Much, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you, it was super awesome. I've never been part of a podcast, so that's cool.
All right, good. And it's only your first of many, maybe moving forward, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll hear your name. All right.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you again, everybody, and have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.